It started with a
whisper. Me, it seemed a bit gimmicky, to be honest, Matt. You know, we know how good a coach Beck is, and you don't doubt her in regards to that, but I just don't think they needed it.
Buddy Franklin's the greatest gift that has been presented to the AFL in the 21st century.
There's a lot of pressure on the umpires, isn't there? They can umpire a really good game and get 98% of it right. The focus will always be on 2% wrong. And then you lump on that, you know, at the end of the game, you've got to come together and adjudicate your votes.
The next game I thought was brilliant in terms of Sydney, what they offered. Incredible defensive intent. They're the best two-way running team in the competition.
On RSN Central, welcome to the Monday Forum.
Here we are, and we've got the great Mick McGowan. Mick, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
No worries, Scotty. Absolute pleasure to be here, as usual.
And we've got the great Glenn McFarlane on the line. Morning, Macca.
Yeah, g'day, Scotty. G'day, Mick. A bit of a whitewash in the grand final, but how good was Geelong?
Mick, you've had a deep breath, like all of us. We've watched the Cats celebrate. What's your thoughts now? Just your early observations 2 days from.
That was superb. They just justified being the best team that we thought they were for most of the year. To win 16 games in a row is just a phenomenal performance. And it was all on the back of, I think they've got an outstanding culture led by one of the best captains this game's ever seen in Joel Selwood. And the way he started the game, having 12 disposals, I thought he was best on ground at quarter time. He certainly set the Cats alight, even though Tom Hawkins, 2 forward 50 stoppage goals, that would have disappointed John Longmire. And that, when he got the first one, I thought, oh no. You just can't afford to give something away like that. Show your back to Hawkins at a stoppage. Mm. You can't do that.
Don't
let him take front position, come from behind. Exactly right. Force him to the boundary line. Don't let him get space on his leg to kick across his body, and then he gets the second one, and you think, wow, this is going to be a long day at the office. The just writing was on the wall, right from an energy perspective, as the game certainly got into its entirety. Contested ball was a massive issue. They just won defining 50-50 contests. And to be plus 21 at halftime, you have to go back to 2011 when they beat Collingwood to have that differential as an advantage. That was the game. Contest, clearance, territory.
And with Geelong, as we know, so they like to have Tom Stewart behind the ball. They tagged Tom Stewart.
Fine, with Ryan Clark.
Very clever. That's great. But they still allowed Tui and others. De Koning was enormous in the first half. So why did Sydney just play into their hands?
Well, initially it was on the back of giving up clearance. So they had to support their defence a little bit. So to give up something, you got to get something. So they just couldn't get territory. Like, after the Haywood goal, before McLean kicks his second goal, it was 19 inside 50s to 2 in that territory time. So no wonder John Longmire said, we've got to fold back some numbers for support. Callum Mills went back.
Yeah.
So from a philosophical standpoint, to stay, we've got to stay in the game as best we can. We just can't allow them equal numbers. We've got to support our defence, because they weren't getting it done. And what really stood out for me, not only could they win contested ball inside forward 50, it was their intercept game in that front half. Like, I think their first three goals of the second quarter were based on intercept possessions and set shots at goal, because they just read the cues close. Myers, Stengel, Cameron.
The system's very good.
Yeah, very good system. They read the cues well, and they turn the ball over and they score on the back of that. That's the reason why they're a premiership team.
Macca, what were your initial thoughts now that the dust has settled?
Yeah, it's incredible. What they've been able to do, guys, is just phenomenal when you think about it. We've all talked about it. Remember, the Hawthorn teams are too old, too slow, too good. This is what Geelong was. They've sort of... This was meant to be an equalisation of the AFL, where there's a revolving door of premiership contenders. Geelong has refused to go back down. And, boys, have a look at these stats when you look at it. They are the club of the 21st century. They've won 4 flags that brings them into line with Hawthorn, but they have won 41 more games since 2001 than any other club. 41. That's 2.5 seasons. So, Mick, it's been a dominant year from Geelong, but this has been a dominant, stretch of time for a football club that just refuses to go down, don't they?
Yeah, and I think, Macca, we wrote a part of that in our article about probably 6 or 8 weeks ago, about two clubs, Geelong and Port Adelaide, are two clubs that just refuse to use that word rebuild or regenerate.
Absolutely.
And as you said, winning's a habit. And so, unfortunately, it's losing. Some clubs get it right, and when it's, you know, you're led from the top at Chris Scott. I was so rapt for Chris Scott, because he's been poorly criticised, I think, because everyone thinks it's about winning a premiership. he is creating a winning culture. It's led by others in that football system with Joel Selwood and their leadership group. It's not just, it just can't be a one-man band. They just get it right. They're a people club first, and I think that's what football clubs are all about. You've got to get good people into your environment and then challenge on the back of those relationships you form. And you can just see when someone speaks from a leadership capacity, people listen. And that's the reason why they're singing from the same hymn book.
Mick, you're on in. Now, Mick, I mean, we'll go through. There's a lot of elements of Geelong. Joel Selwood, I mean, he ticks every box. I mean, carrying Levi Ablett out, his speech. What does he do? I spoke to him after the game. He's genuinely, I think, undecided. I thought he probably would retire. Cameron Ling did after he raised the cup. Tom Harley did. But then, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, the way they played him this year, rested him, played him off the bench, as you said, best on ground the first quarter. Can he do that again? Can he go through 12 months of that with this team again?
Well, I text Joel on Thursday because I got a pretty good relationship with him based on what I saw way back then, 19 years ago, when I seen him as a 15-year-old kid playing for Sandhurst against Gisborne when I was coaching Gisborne in the Bendigo League. And I just wished him all the best, and I just said three words at the end, get it done. And he replied, that's the type of guy he is. He just gets back to everybody. I think he can go again. Now, I just reckon physically he was looked after. I reckon if the season went for another 4 or 5 weeks, no problem. He didn't look like he was hitting the wall. He just looked that way. He looked fresh and he looked reinvigorated. I thought they managed the whole midfield group really well this year. Paddy Dangerfield, Cameron Guthrie, these types of guys are 30 plus, and they did that magnificently from a sports science coaching perspective, morphed into one. And also the selflessness from the players, the icons they are, to give up the me for the we, generated these homes of the world to come into the team. And he's one of the stories that we can get on touch on later. But with Joel Selwood, based on the way he played, the biggest game that we just witnessed, the romance says in me that what a time to leave. But also the logic is he's got a kid on its way in February, first child.
You don't want to be changing nappies full
time. Get back to training, Joel. Now, in all seriousness, I think he could go again. Yeah. And I see no reason why he can't, because I know they've got to regenerate and they're looking at a couple of younger kids that are Geelong bound, probably Tanner Bruin, possibly young Henry out of Collingwood. There's discussion around those two coming into that environment. And they're trying to change that personnel on the run, which they've done magnificently. They're a different team to 2 years ago. They're a different team to 3 years ago because of who they've got in. But I just personally think if Joel has a football decision to make, could he play at this level again for another 12 months? Categorically, yes. My advice to him, you're a long time retired.
Absolutely. Macca, I mean, they're defying logic. They were the oldest team in history to win on grand final day. They've got 10 over 30 and I think a couple more turning 30 next year. What's your gut feel with Selwood and others down there?
Yeah, it's funny. I reckon he was going to retire and he's had a bit of a think about it. I don't know which way he's going to go. You can sort of see that he's wavering on that. He could definitely play on, Mick. We saw that. And just an interesting point. Like, you think Buddy, Dusty and Gary Ablett are automatic Australian Football Hall of Fame legends. I reckon Joel Selwood is knocking right on the door after what he's done now. He could definitely play on, boys. There's going to be a bit of regeneration in that team, as Mick said, with, you know, Max Holmes back in, you know, playing in that, you know, side in next year and obviously seeing what he did this year. But Tanner Bruin and Ollie Henry. But why wouldn't he go on in that sense? And you could see Chris Scott yesterday. I reckon he was edging, in a couple of little interviews I saw, he was edging Joel Selwood to play on. It's clearly going to be Joel's decision, which I think is great. But why wouldn't you play on, Mick? I reckon they can win it again next year. There's no reason. Their best players in the grand final, or many of their best players, were the over 30. So I can't see why they can't do it again.
Yeah, it's a bit like the 33, 32-year-olds of the new 27 and 28 of years gone by.
Absolutely.
So sports science has a lot to do with it, and obviously the way you manage your team, but also manage your squad, and that's what Geelong have done magnificently this year. It's going to be intriguing to see what they do. If you ain't broke, why fix it? And they've got a strong leader who's built this club on great culture and values, and it's led from Joel and Chris. And obviously the support mechanisms underneath are going to be a part of that progression going forward. We know that the evolution of game doesn't stand still for anyone, or anyone's got no right to actually say, I belong here. But in Joel Selwood's case, I think he's earned the right to actually make a decision based on what he thinks best for him and also the footy club. If it's about him, he might say, well, I'm about to be a father, I might leave with this. And if the club embrace him coming back, the club might have the final say as well, because he could say, those people that make those decisions, Joel, you're universally respected.
Yeah.
You can go out in your term, but we want you to stay. We believe in you. We believe you can get the job done again. Because all it does is help the next generation of player to see the way a professional who's a competitor goes about his footy in a leadership capacity.
And, yeah, they had a good injury run because they'd set it up really well. So, you know, Parfitt needs more minutes, obviously, but he had an injury run. There's ways they can manipulate it with Joel still there, I believe.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think it was, I reckon it was about round four, Scotty, and Glenn, correct me if I'm wrong, that they tried to start to manage him, and Joel being the competitor,
yeah, he hated that. He said that.
Did he? Well, there you go. So I reckon it was about that time, and then he sort of embraced probably the back end of the year, saying, well, this is not all about you being out there. We know the captain has to be there primarily, but there's times where we don't need you for the evolution of the team, but also the growth of other players within that group.
Mick, talk to me. They were young. We were excited about their youth. Let's focus on Buddy Franklin initially. He signed a new deal before the start of the grand final week. I agree he should have played on. What does that performance do to him and that team now?
Wayne Carey, Stephen Kernahan, Tony Lockett, Jason Dunstall all would have struggled with the amount of supply they got. So let's put that on the table right from the outset. They were dominated in terms of territory. At one stage, I think it was 50 to 25 entries. They had double the entries. Henry, I thought, did go to him, done a magnificent job. But the way they used the ball going in, either from a stoppage win or a turnover gain, they just got disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
So irrespective who your name was in front of the ball for Sydney, you were always going to struggle. Heaney struggled. Papley struggled.
Well, they all.
They all struggled. Sam Reed, I thought that was an ordinary decision from a selection standpoint. I just didn't understand the logic, and I said it here on Thursday, Scott. If you're going to pick Sam Reed, you're telling me that he should be able to play the role that he'd been playing up until grand final day, and that was the relief ruck to support Hickey.
Yeah.
And he was magnificent at it. But when you bring in McLean and drop McDonald, it tells me McLean was going to be the relief ruck and Sam Reed was going to be a forward. So there was a question mark over his body because they're telling me that they don't want to put him in the ruck because he's groins. And I know from groins, as soon as you get in a bit of a hustle bustle or a bit of a contested situation, you're going to lose your centre of gravity. So I thought that was a mistake right from the outset. It disrupted the mechanisms that they'd had in place from a flow perspective. But when you watch that first 5 minutes and you know what you're looking at, they were 2 yards off the speed of the game.
Yeah.
They finished flat last week, and they started flat this week.
That's a good point.
So that's where the game was won and lost, just in terms of energy right from the outset.
Mac, I'll get your thoughts. It was 8-3-1 at Ballarat on the first. Now, Macca, yeah, we mentioned Buddy and Sydney. What do you think? I mean, obviously, like I said, he signed on. What can Buddy do next year?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, you know, you take away the performance against Collingwood, which was good, not from a goal-kicking perspective, but just from bringing a ball to ground, and you think, oh, this guy's still got it. But the two other finals on the other side of that have been really poor. And Jack Henry played on him in round two and copped a bath, as he said. I spoke to him on the weekend in the rooms, and he said he learnt some stuff on playing on Buddy. And I think it's going to be a fascinating watch, Buddy, next year. He's earned the right to go on. He's kicked more than 50 goals. You earn the right to go on, I think. But he's a fascinating watch to see. As you know, Mick, the end can come pretty quick, doesn't it? Can't it? It can come very quick for players, but he's earned that right. You're spot on about John Longmire, just getting the selection wrong, and he's got very little wrong so far, John Longmire. But they are a young side. We've seen some of these young sides get flogged in finals before and struggle to come back. We saw a bit with Adelaide as well. They weren't that young against Richmond and struggled to come back. But I think they will, Mick and Scotty. I think this team will. But gee, they're going to have some mental scars from what happened on Saturday.
Glenn, can I pose a question to you without notice? Do you think Buddy was in their 2023 plans?
I think it was line ball. I think they would have accepted him not going on. I think they would have been okay with that. That you can't shoot Bambi in the sense of moving someone on who's still going to kick 50 goals. I think initially he probably wasn't in their 2023 planning, but as the year went on, they saw that as an option. If you look at it, Mick, is he going to get any better? He's certainly not going to get any better. Is he going to kick 50 goals next year? I wouldn't think that he would kick 50 goals next year, and that's not denigrating a champion, one of the greats of all time, but, you know, he's... it's a situation where I reckon that they would have moved on pretty quickly and decided to see what they could potentially do. Potentially, you know, with his money out, they could have actually gone out and chased a forward, not that there's many about. So I think they're okay with him playing on, but I don't think it was a desperate situation that they needed him to play on.
All right, boys, we'll have a quick break on RSN Central and back to talk Norm Smith medalists. Welcome back to RSN Central. I have the great Mick McGowan and Glenn McFarlane with me. Now, Norm Smith, Isaac Smith, I mean, what a great story. He was very quiet in the prelim. He was the only cat in that massacre of Brisbane. It was like, oh, yeah, that was interesting. And boy, oh, boy, what a big game performer. I mean, Patrick Dangerfield, it was line ball, I thought, for most of it, but Izzy got the chocolates.
Yeah, I thought at halfway during the third quarter there were three possibly up for grabs, considering the third quarter that Dangerfield was putting on show. Mm. His third quarter was phenomenal. I think he had double figure
his moments,
disposals,
every
contested
time he
ball.
Went there, something happened.
Yeah, four score involvements, four inside 50s, three clearances. He'd done it all in the third quarter, and that certainly put him in the frame at three quarter time. But I suppose I always look for when the game's at the tightest, who's cutting the mustard. And I thought Stengel and Isaac Smith were the two, and Tommy Hawkins, obviously. And if Stengel had probably kicked that fifth one that hit the post, that bouncing one that bounced and hit the post, that could have been another part of his discussion. But, yeah, Isaac Smith, 32 disposals. He just plays with great depth. He reads the cues to kickstart their offense by chaining up with uncontested marks and then to kick three goals, one himself. And he probably turned his back on Paddy when he went back and said, I'm going to kick one outside 50 to make it me fourth. But he didn't, but he deserved it. Fantastic effort. And once again, experience on the big stage, it matters.
And, Macca, I think Max Holmes probably not playing enhanced Isaac's role, and we saw what happened then.
Yeah, exactly, Scotty. I wish you had said to me that before, and I would have taken the $51 that was on offer. It's a great sliding doors moment for Isaac Smith as well. When he decided to leave Hawthorne, it was largely because of the pandemic. He was in the hub, and he just wanted a change. And he had the choice of Melbourne or Geelong, and he agonised over that decision. And I'm sure last year when Melbourne won the flag, he must have been thinking, gee, that fourth medal was so close. But now he's got it. It is just a great story, isn't it? So, and I refuse to believe, like, he's the oldest Norm Smith medalist at 33. I refuse to believe KB wasn't more. KB looked about 40 when he won that that 1980 Norm Smith medal, didn't he, Mick?
Oh, no comment. He might be listening, KB. He's a great man.
But the Max Holmes decision, we touched on it, but the kid thought he was right. He trained, did everything on Friday morning, but I think Chris Scott, yeah, he lived through it with the Lions. He's seen it.
Nigel Lappin.
Mm. And I think the way they thought of it, Holmes is a very exciting young player, but Parfitt, Menengott, like, it's not like there's no one ready who could just step in. So I think it was just that 1% that the coach made a pretty brutal call.
Yeah, it was a brutal call. And in hindsight, you could say it was the right call. Yeah. He might have got through the game and he'd probably thinking, well, if I knew the outcome of the game was going to go this way, we might have rolled the dice. But in saying that, you haven't got the crystal ball in front of you to give you the right outcome. But I thought, once again, they just managed their team and made strong decisions when they had to. We spoke about the Joel Selwood one way back in round four. It just changes the whole dynamic of what it's about. It's about team first. And those clubs that embrace team first rather than individuality, they're the one that share the spoils of success. And these hard calls have to be made at the pointy end of the year. One got it right, and unfortunately for Sydney, they got it wrong.
Macca, and just on the Cats, I mean, the growth of, I think it was about half a dozen youngsters, De Koning, we know, Myers, Best Footy, Collegezzi, all these guys played career ball at the right time. Zach
they
Guthrie.
Did. And some of them we were doubting, Scotty. Like, you know, there's a lot of people saying, what the hell is Zach Guthrie doing in this Geelong side earlier in the year? And the amount of work he's put in to get himself in. I also remember on De Koning, there was a question put to Chris Scott early, maybe even in the pre-season it was. Someone said, look, you've got some big issues in the ruck. Maybe you should move this guy there. And he looked at the person asking the question as if he was silly and said, this guy's going to be a star backman. And we've seen his evolution. He played one game leading into this year. So we've seen the development of Holmes and you know, Close had a fantastic grand final as well. So they're young players, I think. We talk about the old guys, but they're young to middle-tier players up to the 24, 25-year-old bracket. Are very good, and that's why I think they can compete and really contend, and they probably deserve to be starting the season favourite again next year.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, we'll talk We've got another race at Ballarat coming up in the news, but we'll talk after that, Mick. A lot of tinkering's going on behind the scenes at contenders. They're all got their fingers in pies. How the rest of the competition can maybe catch up to Geelong, because I feel like they've got a little bit of a break in the way they're playing.
Absolutely. Well, they've just got the balance of offence. When they go forward, they can kick 100 points on average. But also, they're very hard to score against. They don't give up scores. I think they give up on average, or since round 18, it was about 63 points. Over the course of the year, it was about 69 points. And what they give up on grand final day? 52 points. They just get this balance of offence, defence right. And that's when you know you've got a complete game. So they are clearly the measuring stick.
And Chris Scott, I mean, you could tell, they tinkered the way they coached. You know, they cleaned out the coaches last year. I mean, for circumstance, not just because he wanted to get rid of him. I mean, Scarlett had done a lot for that back line, a lot for Zach Guthrie, you know, Matty Knights, Corey Enright, all very good coaches. But they came in with a different way of doing it.
And I think it's just honesty about we've got to do something different. We've tried to defend with the footy by accumulating the ball and kick mark. But they just need to get more speed on the game and look at the Richmonds of the world, Carlton this year, Collingwood this year. When you play at speed and go forward, trust your forwards, you've got a great chance to win games of footy.
Welcome back to RSN Central. Mick McQuan and I are just having a bit of a giggle. The Cats, I mean, they do everything right, Mick. Their Monday celebrations, Mad Monday, they set the bar. Matty Scarlett back in the day, they really ramped it up.
And they
it
did.
Helps when you keep winning grand finals. Because Kane Corns doesn't like you celebrating bad news, but we won't mention that. The boys have ramped it up. We mentioned that they were the oldest team in the comp. They've arrived all inside a, what is it, a
retirement
home village bus.
Yeah.
Danger's got out and hobbled along and opened it, and then Isaac Smith has fittingly fallen out with a, what's he got there? They've got wheelchairs, they've got canes, they've got, it's magnificent. So do yourself a favour, superfooty.com. The vision of that is just, they're too good. They are too good.
That's clever. That is very clever. You know, just seeing all these pensioners get off this retirement home bus is just incredible. Good on them.
They're elite level. Now, Macca, I want to ask you about contenders. And Trade Week starts next week, but we all know it's been going on for a while. But officially, it's next Monday. And I like how it says a week, but it goes for, what, 12 days. It finishes on a Wednesday. What are the big movers? So Richmond, they've gone with their veterans, which they'll be pretty happy to see what Geelong did. So they've reloaded with Cochin and Riewoldt. They're after these two GWS midfielders. But is there? I wouldn't want Jack Graham to fall out if they're shaking that tree, because then they
agree.
The depth they're after, they sort of lose it straight away.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And we've seen that with Geelong. Like, Geelong haven't really lost anyone of any note, and they've been able to just manage that salary cap brilliantly the way they've done it. And you wouldn't want to lose Jack Graham if I'm Richmond. There's no way you want to lose it, because I think his upside's still there. You know, and certainly his leadership is important. They're desperate to get Tim Taranto in and Jacob Hopper. The Tigers have got picks 12, 19, 30 and a future first round. Well, they go. They're off. They're going to be out of the club in regard to, they'll get rid of all of those to try and get the two GWS players in. So, as you say, they've loaded up with their older players. Can they make it? Can they play in a grand final, do you think, next year, Mick? Because I'm thinking Melbourne's the team that can hit back hard next year. Do you reckon Richmond can play in a grand final?
I do. I just think they got their defensive mechanisms all at sea wrong this year.
Grimes a year older and the hamstrings were back, Mick.
Yeah, they were. But I just think around the footy they can tidy up, particularly with Hopper and Taranto. So all of a sudden, on the back of getting two more midfielders in to win clearance, get territory, as we witness, Geelong historically are not a clearance-winning team. Nice. They defend clearance really well, create the turnover game and score. But on the weekend, they just flipped that on its head. They dominated clearance, got it forward and scored on the back of clearance wins. So their stoppage game was supreme in a grand final that not many people saw coming. And I think if Richmond make that adjustment with the personnel they're bringing in, we know they're a very strong forward half team. Tom Lynch had a fantastic year this year. And on the back of that, with their defensive structures not dissimilar to what Geelong they can put in place, all of a sudden opposition really struggle to go from back to front and score. If they get that balance right, win territory, lock it in, front half game, have it strong, come behind your attack to squeeze and cover exits on the way out, we could see Richmond certainly challenging in the not-too-distant future.
Macca, and all that's with, like, Dustin Martin had an asterisk year. I mean, through no fault of his own, he had circumstances, then some injury. And it sounds like he's really refocused already, Macca. Like, he was in the discussions with Taranto and Hopper. You get the feeling, I think Dusty's got a message to send next year.
I think he has, Scott. And to be honest, I think that's the them in a nutshell. If Dusty is invested and wants to get back to that level, and he would have seen what Geelong done, that has done in the last, you know, the last month, that would be sitting with him, trying to think about winning. You know, Joel Selwood's got a fourth premiership medal. That's what he'd be thinking of what he could potentially do. So if he's invested, guys, and by the sound of it, and speaking to a few Richmond people, they believe he's invested now like he hasn't been for a couple of years. So I think that's going to be the difference between them sort of being a middle rung, sort of, you know, 6, 7, 8 team to being a real competitive team again. He can get back to his best, and if he can do that, Richmond can win the flag next year.
All right, now I'll give you the Collingwood couple of minutes, you two. John DeGoey needs to get paid whatever he wants, so we all agree with that. And I'm a bit surprised, Macca, it hasn't eked out. You know, it's been a week or so since they finished. Hopefully that's about to happen.
Yeah, we hope so. St Kilda, Collingwood have had to up their year levels, so they've had to make it 5 years in a sense. The thing that's held it back quite clearly is that Jordan's not happy with some of the restrictions that are going to be on him, certainly in the first couple of years in terms of behavioural clauses, because he wants to know, and this is understandable, Mick, I reckon, he wants to know how that is judged. That can be an ambit scenario, and wants to see how that's actually judged, the behavioural clauses of that, in regard to that. So that's been the hold-up, I think, Scotty, that Jordan wants some more clarity in regard to that. St Kilda is still coming and still...
Just on that point, though, Glenn, just on that point, mate... Yeah. Do you really need clarity around that? Isn't it just simple? Just behave well?
It should be.
So,
well,
I'm,
I think the point is,
the interpretation
judges
of...
judges what your behaviour is. That's
yeah.
The, I think
well,
that's what he wants to know. Who is judging that?
Yeah.
I also know how close
and
he can get.
You know, we all make mistakes in the sense. I'm not saying that he's made plenty, and we know that. But he just wanted a little bit of clarity in regard to who actually judges, you know, the mistakes you actually do make.
Who do you think that will be?
Well, I think it's got to be the key football people within Collingwood, like who, you know, whether
so
that's
is it Graham Wright?
Wright, whether that's the coach. So I think he will end up staying. The one that sort of stuns me, and I might be completely wrong in this, I still cannot believe Collingwood are prepared to offload Brodie Grundy to Melbourne. I still shake my head at that.
I mean, there's two elements of this. First, Collingwood. I agree, Macca. I mean, Cox and Cameron was all warm and fuzzy for a couple of weeks, and yeah, they're a nice combination, but Brodie Grundy, yeah, you're allowed to have 1 year of down form and injury. I don't know why. I get the salary cap, and they're using that as an excuse, but why they're so desperate to get him out? Could they keep him and DeGoey and move on, or clearly they can't?
I think it's gone beyond that, Scott. I think, Scotty, I think Brodie is out the door, and I think he's the level of anger that he's probably got. One day he's disappointed with the way it's panned out in that sense. So I think it may have gone beyond that with Grundy. I think, as I said, I think DeGoey will stay. Nick, I'd love your view on this about Brodie Grundy. We saw in the preliminary final, the Collingwood Rucks and Stocks absolutely mauled early on, which probably cost them the game in some aspect too. Are you surprised Collingwood's just as easy to just push Brodie Grundy out the way they've done it?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Grundy's got to stay. He's their best ruckman on their list currently. Cameron, as Scotty said, and Cox had a bit of a fairy tale honeymoon period through the season. But once we got to the real pointy end of the season, watching that ruck combination against Sydney's in that final last week, preliminary final weekend, we were terrible around stoppage.
Yep.
Collingwood were poor around clearance and contested situations in the first half. That's when the game was separated. And I thought Brodie Grundy could have been a point of difference. And then he's sitting up in the grandstand injured. And then we're talking about offloading him to another team that's probably got the best ruckman if he's fully fit in Max Gawn. So we're going to see two ruckmen playing together. They're going to be the 1-2 punch in season 2023. And we, I think, Collingwood, have got one player who I think's a very lucky footballer in terms of Mason Copps, in terms of the length of time he's been given a chance to play at a standard of expectation. I don't reckon he's lived that on a consistent basis. We know we've seen periods, 2018 prelim, we revert back to that. The first quarter, a couple of years later against, I think, the West Coast Eagles over there in a final. But in between that, what's he really done consistently? Yeah. And Cameron, I don't think he's a number one ruckman. I think he's a forward who becomes a relief ruckman. So I've got serious concerns as to what the line of thinking is particularly when you get McStay, who's a lead-up forward. Is he going to be a relief ruck? We saw him play ruck 3 weeks ago in a final, and he did well because McInerney got subbed out of the game. That was not by design. That was by luck. And then you're talking about other players that
Billy
clearly don't
Frampton's
fill that role. Billy Frampton, they're talking about him.
Fifth coming, Billy.
Well, that's right. And we've got a bloke that they were prepared to put on big money initially. He's got 5 more years of that contract to run. Yes, they've made some mistakes with salary cap before Graham Wright probably got there. But in saying that, I just think ruckman, they're hard to get. You have a look through VFL, you look through AFL, and you look at the lists. If there's one concern for recruiters and list managers right now, is the future of the game for ruckman.
Ruckman.
Where are they? Who are they?
Well, further to that, Mick, Melbourne, I can't get my head around how do you make this work? Max Gawn is a great ruckman because he plays ruck for 70%. He's not, yes, he's kicked goals. A lot of them was when he was playing in the ruck. How are they going to, Brody Grundy needs to play time in the ruck. He's not a forward.
Yeah, he does, but there could be an element of Brody Grundy with the mobility that he's got when he's fully fit. He could possibly do a bit like Mark Wixoff's. With Gawn pushing back behind the ball to do what Reece Stanley done with Chris Scott. We know he's a very good aerialist, Max Gawn. And then the mobility of Brody Grundy could be used like a Blixlav's can be. He's got to learn more forward craft. So on the back of more experience with that type of role, maybe it's something in terms of innovation Melbourne could look at.
Because on paper it makes sense, but like, for example, I mean, Braden Pruce isn't Grundy, but when Pruce went there, I was like, why are you going there? You're not going to get any, and he didn't see any action because Max Gawn's the best.
Yeah, well, that's the best. And then Jackson, they had eyes on him, of course, too. So with Jackson leaving, I think it opens up a situation where they could probably try to do something different that's totally different to what they've done, because now they've got McDonald coming back. They missed Tom McDonald at the back end of the year. We know that. They certainly need another forward, a conduit between defence and attack to link up and take a catch up at the logos. McDonald is that man, but they missed him big time. But I think they'll try to do something different with that combination if it bears fruit.
And Macca, with Melbourne, I think their fitness was highlighted. They lost the close games. They got run over. Do they bring the same game style, same personnel other than Grundy and be a contender again?
I think they need to change a few things, Scotty, no doubt there. The fitness issue was a concern all year, leaving aside the first 10 rounds. I found that they just didn't run out games the way they'd previously done. I think they're going to be a real contender next year. I think they're good enough, and they're great. They're really good players. We're probably banged up at the wrong end. Certainly Max Gawn was one of them. We know Petrarca was as well. So I think they are the likely challenges for Geelong next year in regard to that. So, bringing Brody Grundy in, if they can make that work, I've got some reservations, but if they can make that work, that's a massive win. Luke Jackson obviously goes out. They may lose Adam Tomlinson, which will be okay. They'll be looking in the draft to try and see if they can try and find a forward. But I think they were banged up at the wrong time, so I'm giving them an out, Mick. I don't know whether I'm being too generous, but I'm just giving them an out towards the end of the season.
Yeah, the second half of the year was clearly disappointing. I think we're all expecting them to turn around and turn the switch, but as we know, football has become a creature of habit, and so does your system. You have to do it over and over and over again and be consistent in that. And that's the reason why Geelong, I think, for over a long period of time, have been superb. They're a winning club. Melbourne have tasted that success last year. Could they back it up? That was the big question. For the first 10 rounds, they certainly did when they were 10 and zip, but the second half of the year went a bit pear-shaped on the back of losing key personnel. Players that were playing were probably really sore. I've heard that Max Gawn was playing under duress. Petrarca, as you mentioned, Glenn, at the back end of the year was. So I think they'll just have to get their hunger back. And I put on the table, I reckon it was about round 8 or 9, Glenn, when we looked at some of the ways Melbourne closed out their games. How big a loss was their fitness man, Burgess? And that's the undefinable one that they have to answer. They've got to come to conclusions as to why were they so super fit the previous year. Yes, health plays a part, but the work they did previously, was it not matched this year over the summer? And that's the reason maybe why they got injury, but also they slipped away late in games.
And boys, out of the contenders, to finish up this conversation, Brisbane's the one I'm very worried about. I mean, Josh Dunkley, nice in, I get it. But that forward structure, McStay goes out of it. But Hipwood, Danaher, I'm just, what I saw, I'm not sure they can contend without changing things up.
I'm glad you said that, Scott, because I've got serious concerns over Hipwood and Danaher being marquee key forwards that can grab a game by the throat. And in finals, you need key forwards like Tom Hawkins did on the weekend, whether it's at a stoppage or just a lead-up target. He always found front position really strongly to compete. Now, Danaher and Hipwood, they'll get you and they'll tease you. But can it be consistently good enough to do what big men do in finals at the end of the year? I've got grave concerns over their ability to influence games in a contested sense. Yes, they're tram track leaders who lead straight at the footy. They get separation. They look good on an uncontested mark. But sometimes finals footy is about just dumping it forward and getting it on top of their head and competing and marking the ball in that opportunity. They don't do that enough.
Mac, I'll get your opinion after. We've got the third at Ballarat. We've got a short favourite, La La Unity, at $1.60.
For the third race in the cards of La La Unity. Very short here, 160 and a 165, trained by Donna Knight, who's got a great record of these Monday programs here at Ballarat, and she's doing exceptionally well in the training ranks, which is great to see. Crimson Onyx, number 8, 750 into 550. Seven Rose City is 5, slightly out to 6 here. 160 and pretty solid now, La La Unity. Box 6, they're at the starting point, about to move in. Previous race in the car was taken out by Carlton Story for Dennis Craven and trainer Keith Lloyd, and they're getting set now, moving in. Starting signal being box now, Ligero into 1, Shimmer Sparkle 3. Looks 5 vacant, Mo City in 7. Buzz out 2, Jacques and Ojet, La La Unity favourite 6 with a green vest here. Crimson Onyx the outside, box 8. Moving in. All in set to go, running 390, Ballarat Race 3. They're set, about to go. Racing. La La Unity jumped away pretty well. It's about midfield settling down. Going out fast there. Mo City near the outside. La La Unity drives over though. And La La Unity, the favourite, takes up the running. By 3 lengths off the back straight from Mo City, Crimson Onyx. A gap of the race in Jack and O'Jet, Shimmer Sparkle, followed by Buzzat Ligero. In the straight though, La La Unity's off and gone. It's racing clear. La La Unity's a big winner by about 6. Crimson Onyx second, third is Mo City, followed then by Jack and O'Jet. Then Shimmer Sparkle, followed by Buzzat Ligero. The time is showing around 22:40. Around 22:40.
I hope you're on the favourite there, Mickey. That was an easy, easy thing. Now, thank you for coming in, Mick.
No worries, Scotty.
Much appreciated. Mac, I want, you know, Trade Week's going to engulf you and me for the next few weeks. Give me your best headline or the biggest move that you think will go down.
It's going to be interesting. Dunkley, we know, is going to Brisbane. The one that I hope, and this is Mick, this is me talking, you know, with a bit of personal sort of feel, Grundy stays at Pies. Now, I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the one that I would love to see happen because I think Collingwood can ill afford to lose him. Scotty, it's going to be a crazy period. We all say it every time that it's going to be the biggest trade period, but this one's going to be a big one.
Thank you for your time, Mac. And Mick, what are your thoughts? Trade period, you love it or hate it or... It is what it is nowadays.
I find it hard to get caught up in all the rumour and innuendo. I like dealing in facts at this time of year, Scotty, and sometimes you've got to gravitate to the narrative. But if there's one thing we do know, there will be movement. And as soon as the big domino falls, everything else falls underneath.
Mate, thank you so much for your time. Mick
Anytime.
And Glenn McFarlane. We'll have a little break now on RSN Central.